strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show, KTAR News, 92.3 FM, and the KTAR News app.
Hey, thanks so much for being here. It is the Mike Broomhead Show. Joining us right now is the election auditor, I guess the liaison for the election audit, Ken Bennett. Ken, welcome back to the show. I'm glad you're here. Let's start off, first question, what about the count? Can you give us any idea where we are?
Well, I think we're over the 200,000 mark, which puts us at about 10%. That's a little slower than we had wanted to be at this point, but other than having to step aside for about a week, in the week after next for some graduations to be held here at the Coliseum, we have 6 or more weeks thereafter that we can come back in and finish the audit, and everything will be done. Speed is not our ultimate goal. Accuracy is, and so we're on pace to get the job done.
So what is it that's slowing you down from where you, when you originally started? When you took this project on, we had talked, and you said you thought you'd be done by May 14th, and now you're about 10% of the way done. Do you have any reasons for why it's taking much longer than you thought?
Well, the contractors gave me those assurances that they thought they would be able to start immediately at a number of ballots per table per shift. And that has, instead of, you know, starting at full speed on day one, it took time for teams to get ramped up. And so they thought that a team of five people at a table during a five-hour shift would be able to do three or four boxes. And we are in the 1 to 2 range. But it's improving every day. And so, as I said, with that improvement, we'll be just fine. Right. Whenever you do a new process, you're going to have, a learning curve, and it was just a little bit bigger learning curve than they had hoped, I guess.
All right. Can you explain, we played the audio, I know you were at the podium with a guy named John Brakey when he talked about looking for bamboo in the paper. Can you explain what's going on, why they're doing that, and who authorized, who's the one who said that this is important enough to look for?
Well, looking for bamboo, that's a euphemism for, you know, there are some people on the right that think that, you know, they've heard rumors that ballots were brought in from Asia, and if so, would there be bamboo in the paper? But they're just looking for things that we're looking for things to dispel. We're trying to myth bust here. And so there's nothing wrong, in my opinion, for looking to make sure that there isn't bamboo in the paper or whatever. You know, there's crazy ideas that can come up on both sides. 4 years ago, the big crazy idea was a Russian dossier that had the candidate for president of the United States in a room with prostitutes and all kinds of stuff that proved to be totally false. But instead, it became the evidence, so-called, of FISA court warrants that were used to spy on the candidacy and then later the presidency. So we're here at this audit trying to dispel myths and confirm things with facts. And if somebody has the idea that there might have been paper from unauthorized sources, whether it's bamboo or anything else, we'll look at that. And if there isn't any, we'll dispel that.
I don't expect that we're going to
find any bamboo in the paper, but one of the people told Mr. Brakey that he thought that's why we were doing what we were doing. So Mr. Brakey reported that.
So the machines that are brought in by Jovan Pulitzer, he was saying that those are the machines.
There haven't been any machines brought in by Jovan Pulitzer.
So what is his role?
Jovan Pulitzer was a consultant as to what things should we maybe look for. And they're using 5K cameras to take pictures of the ballots, to look for folds. They're using some microscopic cameras to make sure that the alignment marks on the ballots, as printed by the authorized printer for Maricopa County, are in the places that they said they would be. They're looking for depression marks where people filled out the ovals to make sure that the ovals were filled out by a handheld writing instrument instead of a Xerox machine or something. So it's just common sense things that we're looking at to either confirm things or dispel, some would say, some crazy notions. But what's wrong with busting some myths?
Well, I did, the only thing I would push back on and say about this, Ken, with all due respect, is when they did the investigations into Donald Trump for 4 years with the different committees and the Mueller report, people like yourself and people like me said this is a waste of time and money, that the dossier had been dispelled as a myth for a long time, and we're wasting time and money on it. So when people hear that they're looking for bamboo in the paper, people shrug their shoulders and say, what's going on with my ballot and why are they looking for bamboo in the paper? You have to at least understand the question.
I understand the question, but what we're asking about is the general idea of just inspecting the paper to make sure that it was authentic.
Okay.
We've got almost 2.5 million pieces of paper that were produced supposedly by the people that were authorized by Maricopa County to produce it. And as we make sure that only authentic paper was received back in the ballots that were counted, then we dispel those myths.
Have you found any sign of there being different paper used so far?
I've not heard any findings to that effect, and we wouldn't be announcing those findings as we go anyway. All of the findings will be in a final report, and everything will be public at that time.
All right, so on a week from today, May 14th, you're going to have to wrap it up at least for a while and leave that space so graduations can happen. We've heard from the people at the state fair, officials are saying that it's not feasible for you to return. What is the status of you returning back to the Coliseum?
No, they said it was not feasible to extend our use of the Coliseum past the 14th because for about a week they have to use the Coliseum for the graduations. But
okay. There's
other facilities here on the premises that we can store the ballots securely under 24-hour guarded security and 24/7 video streaming. And we will step aside from the floor of the Coliseum for the graduations for about a week, and we'll come back and finish the job.
All right, so the last question has to be about security. The Secretary of State, Katie Hobbs, sent in observers. One of the observers said that there's no security, the computers weren't locked, and at this point he thinks the ballots have been compromised. I'm paraphrasing a little bit, but that's what he said. How do you respond to that?
I totally disagree, and everything that we're doing is under 24/7 live streaming camera, and there's no lack of security. You don't get in this building. There's a very strong perimeter on the outside. You don't get in the building unless... we know you by name and you are here for a purpose, including those observers who are coming in and now giving their opinions that something's not secure. But I couldn't disagree more with their opinions, and we'll continue to move forward. And everything we're doing is documented and viewed by the press who are here while they're counting.
Ken, as always, I appreciate the time. Look forward to getting another update.
All righty. Look forward to it, too.
All right. Thank you. That is Ken Bennett. He is the former Secretary of State, the audit liaison down at the Coliseum. So that's where we're at. They are saying now they're somewhere in the neighborhood of over 200,000 ballots. Concession today saying that it is, taking longer than they expected. And they are not going to be done by the May 14th date, but they are confident that they're going to get it done more quickly as things move forward. And they're going to be back in. We'll talk more about this morning as it goes on. The looking for bamboo, all the other things in the ballot. But we've got it. This is an important topic for everybody because of the sanctity of your ballot. Everyone needs to know that their private secret ballot remains private and remains secret. Your identity can't be found out, but also nothing can be compromised. That's the last thing anybody wants. So good conversation. I'm glad he came on with me. We'll talk more about this coming up in just a couple of moments.
Values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
Hey, thanks for being here. It's the Mike Broomhead Show. Ken Bennett just joined us a few minutes ago talking about the audit. I want to get into some economy stuff. I think it's very important. Some of the numbers we heard, unemployment, housing numbers, things that are people concerned about. How do we dig out of the crisis from this pandemic? But just a couple of comments about the audit. At the beginning of this audit, when all of this was announced that the county wanted, the county was not cooperating, and I got to tell you, I don't blame the county board of supervisors for a lot of this. because their necks are on the line as well. They're in control of the machines. They have control of the ballots, and they've got to make sure things are done the right way. So I never had a problem with them expecting and saying this has all got to be done the right way. We're not just going to give things over. And I want everyone to realize, if you were someone in favor of the audit, that if you weren't in favor of it, if you were someone not in favor of it, you would want them to fight just as hard for the secrecy. So I don't hold anybody at the County Board of Supervisors hostage, so to speak, because they didn't just willingly just turn everything over. But once it was ordered to be turned over, my hope was that this audit was going to be done quickly. It was going to be done transparently. Now, they're saying, and they are 100% right, that there's a 24-hour-a-day, 7-day-a-week visual and a network that's showing you. But we don't know a lot. We don't have a lot of answers. And they have to admit there were security issues at the beginning of this thing, where reporters for 4 days in a row walked right into the Coliseum. I believe that's been fixed. But when you have that to begin with, when the company that's heading up the audit is supposed to be the expert, and I'm doing the air quote thing, and what they're doing is passing out blue and black pens on day one, it doesn't build confidence in people. Then when people find out some guy they've never heard of that is a treasure hunter, that's learned how to find things, is now giving advice on how to look for bamboo in paper, people are going to have serious questions. And they're going to make fun of it. I made fun of it yesterday. We talked about sending pandas in there yesterday, you know, ballot sniffing pandas to sniff out the bamboo. It's bordering on what looks like ridiculousness. I am in favor of transparency. I didn't care about there being an audit. I didn't care what it costs, because of all the investigations against Trump for 4 years, no one on the left cared about any of the costs of those investigations, which bore no fruit, none whatsoever. Everything was tossed out, and there was never any, they impeached him. It never went any further, but there was no proof of the Russians. The Mueller report said so. The dossier was all debunked. All that stuff happened. And what we did was 4 years worth of investigations. So I don't want to hear people complain about the cost of it. But the practice of it, the opportunity right now for them to say, this is what transparency looks like. And we don't see a lot of it. We don't have a lot of answers. We don't know how many ballots specifically have been counted every day. We don't know what kind of reports are being written. What have they found so far? Have they found anything so far? We don't know anything. And then they're going to pack up. They're going to leave for a week, then they're going to go back, and we don't know where they're going to store the ballots. They said there's other facilities on the property. All of those things are relevant to everybody involved. And I will tell you, as a Republican voter, if I've got these questions, and I know the people involved that are doing this, some of them that are involved in this, and I have these kind of questions, then there are people that are detached from politics or on the other side of the political aisle that have huge questions, and they're legitimate questions. You can't throw people out because they question what you're doing, because you question everything everybody else does. And that's the way the system is supposed to work. The Senate said they wanted to do this because they didn't believe in the professionalism, or I shouldn't say professionalism. They didn't believe in the expertise of the outfits that were hired to do the two audits on hardware and software. So the Senate said, I don't think that's good enough. We want to do our own. Does anybody out there believe that the cyber ninjas or Jovan Pulitzer or any of these other people that are doing this are any more experts than anyone else? And let's be honest, what have they showed us? What have they shown us that shows us that these are the best people qualified to get to the bottom of any issue that there might be? Because the premise was they're better than what we had before. And as a Republican voter, as someone who is connected by party to the people that are doing this, and I, very honestly, there are people that are involved doing this that I would consider casual friends, you know, people I get along with that I think good things about, that I don't have evil thoughts about, or I don't think they're bad people or dishonest. So it's not easy for me to call this into question necessarily, but it's important. The people of Maricopa County, forget politics, forget Republican, Democrat, Libertarian. The people of Maricopa County do have a right to know that their elections are fair, that their elections are not jaded. But I'm still asking the question, how many people out there believe that this process is going to tell that story? You've already got people saying, well, I already think they're compromised. I think this is, so are you going to, again, do something that's going to solve no problem? Because the same people that believe it was bad to begin with still believe it, and the people that didn't believe it's bad still aren't going to believe it. Who are we convincing here? And that's the goal. And I think one thing he said that's right is it should be accuracy over speed. But what are we looking at? You know, when you are hearing about black lights looking for watermarks and people looking for bamboo in the paper because there was a rumor that 40,000 ballots got flown in from China. I mean, there's a lot of rumors. I could say little green men broke into the building. That doesn't mean it's real, and it doesn't mean it warrants some further investigation. When you are going to do anything with the ballot, you should have a damn good reason to do it. And you should be able to say, this is why. And in some cases, I will say they had a valid reason for doing some kind of an audit. But you're looking for bamboo in the paper. And people are just going to get fed up. This is going to backfire if they're not careful. And it's going to backfire badly. I know I was going to talk economy here. I apologize. In a moment, we're going to talk about policing with a man named Jacob Rayford, who's the communications director for We Rising. We'll talk with him coming up here in just a moment.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
Hey, thanks so much for being here. It's the Mike Broomhead Show. Policing and what needs to be done to build confidence in every community across the state of Arizona and the country when it comes to policing, and how do we affect the change that's necessary, if change is necessary. Joining me right now from an organization called We Rising is their lead organizer. His name is Mr. Rayford, Jacob Rayford. Jacob, welcome to the show. Let's start off with how you differ from a Black Lives Matter or other organizations that want to defund the police, or are you trying to defund the police as well?
You know, this is a method of defunding the police. I know there's there's people politicize the term and whatnot, but really, when you look at these inflated budgets and the fact that these police departments are, geared to serve in these communities as from the standpoint of, an authoritative presence or, leading through tactics such as pain compliance. You know, there's an issue, when it comes to assessing the, the subject matter of police brutality. You know, when you look at these issues such as what happened with Deion Johnson or Anthony Connell or Antonio Arce, these, resulted in, or evolved from issues which should not have really had police involvement in the first place. So what we're looking to do is create a new department that would serve as a buffer between, the community and the issues of, police culture, over policing, hyper policing. And, this department would, of course, specialize in, crisis assistance, behavioral assistance, substance abuse, calls pertaining to the unsheltered community. But when you expand upon that and look at a lot of the calls, such as what is categorically defined by the police department as nonviolent crimes, the larger conversation of why are we trying to heal with the hammer or misuse specific resources for tasks that don't require that approach.
When you have had. The Phoenix Police Department was one of the first in the nation to have squads of officers that are trained to handle mental health evaluations or mental health crisis. And so they have teams of officers that have been trained in that regard. And the other thing I would say, and I'd love to hear your answer to, is we are bigger in land mass and bigger in population than Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And the Phoenix Police Department is half the size of the Philadelphia Police Department. How can you say that it's too big? I would argue that it's too small.
The first part of what you had said in terms of, getting police officers training in what are legitimately sciences, like behavioral health sciences. Of course, there's an inherent, it's incongruous because, you're leading from a standpoint of a specific culture, right? Police departments, fire departments, EMT departments, they operate under a specific workplace culture, just like your, business operates under a certain workplace culture. And with the police department, they're trained to de-escalate using physical means, using what is defined by police officers as pain compliance.
and other things that really don't that aren't necessary for specific scenarios, such as what I had mentioned in the beginning of the call.
But do you think? Do you think that they're doing that in situations where it's not necessary? Because again, I would argue with you. We look at the situation of what happened last week, where a police officer was killed in the East Valley. That started as a traffic stop with a suspect that was shooting at a sheriff's vehicle from a moving vehicle, and then ended up running over two police officers. Had that person just pulled over and complied, none of that would have happened. So, are you arguing that police are using force when it's not necessary?
Police officers are using force when it's not necessary. And just based off the culture of policing, it's difficult to, or impossible, really, to be honest, to, lead through a specific lens when it comes to behavioral crises and substance abuse crises and calls pertaining to the unsheltered community through the standpoint of, a humanitarian, non-aggressive format. You know, it's ingrained into, the culture of the police force. You're instructing individuals to take, for instance, an hour training on, community relations or, situational awareness that requires an understanding of behavioral sciences. If it were that easy to, master these techniques and understandings, then there wouldn't be literal certifications for these practices that people are, operate from a professional standpoint in. So, but this thing that we say when it comes to crisis assistance and the involvement of police officers is you can't heal with a hammer. You have to have a resource that's comparable to the issue at hand. And more often than not, it is not defined under what is required for policing. So, that is the reason why we're looking to create a department such as the Neighborhood Organized Crisis Assistance Program.
Were you at the City of Phoenix meeting where they were discussing the crisis team and more money for this to expand the fire department's part in all of this in crisis management? Were you at that meeting?
Yes, I'm actually part of the Neighborhood Organized Crisis Assistance Program Coalition, which has members of different organizations and whatnot, such as We Rising, such as Feed Phoenix, such as Grassroots Law Project. So we're at virtually all of these budget hearings that have been taking place over the past quarter.
So someone argued at that meeting against the expansion of that program because the fire department works with the police department or something to that effect. Do you subscribe to that we should not be expanding this? Because it sounds like that program is doing exactly what you are trying to affect.
With their version, the community assistance program, it's very vague in nature. And, in order to instill trust in the community, we have to understand that there is an inherent issue with the issue of, with the policing, the culture of policing, and the communities that are disproportionately targeted. So when it comes to behavioral sciences and crises, it needs to be housed in a department that's able to manifest its own culture. Because of the fire department, it has a culture that is in line with pro-police or authoritative, perspectives. It's hard to lead with a standpoint of empathy because, again, in cases you are dealing with people who are in the middle of mental crises, who are experiencing issues with substance abuse and just need help. They don't need to be treated as, a threat to society. These are individuals who need compassion in very intimate moments.
All right.
And unfortunately, because of how policing is geared, we can't, or how the culture of the fire department is geared, they're not trained to understand that from an empathetic standpoint that you would find in behavioral health sciences.
So 2 points to that, and then I have to wrap this up, but I love this conversation. Number one is there are times when people, you're right, that are going through a mental health crisis or are dealing with a drug abuse issue or something, an overdose or some kind of a bad reaction, and then they become violent and dangerous, and there has to be people to protect them. But let me go back to the other point where I said where the police department is too small. When you talk about lack of training, well, the ability to train is not there because the police officers are overworked and there is no time for training. They're answering calls for service. That's where my call for more officers is. If there's more officers on the street, more officers in the department, it gives them time to go to training and be properly trained so that the other officers on duty can still do their jobs and calls for service. How do you answer that?
I answer that by saying that we need a department that takes the majority of these calls off them in the first place. You speak to overburdened and overstaffed police department. But when you look at what they're dispatched for, that check wellness calls, noise complaints, things that are in just in nature from an elementary standpoint, non-threatening. then, you know, when you place that in a new, independent, fully funded, fully fleshed department, then you take a lot of those resources off the police. So what you're speaking to would be resolved it just naturally. And so that's the best way to approach that. And when it comes to training, these are things that require years of understanding, years of schooling, and a legitimate certification in these fields. You can't expect a police officer to train in this, just like you can't expect the EMT to learn how to police. And when it comes to issues where there were potential violent instances, these are very exponentially small and very rare on occasion. And we have spoke with people who operate within these fields. And of course, since it's an independent department, they would have the ability to use their judgment and call for departmental help or other resources if the need arises, just like the EMT would call for assistance from the police or from the fire department if it falls under those categories.
Well, Mr. Rayford, I appreciate you coming on the show today, and I hope you'll come back because this is a conversation I think that needs to continue, and I hope you'll do it.
Thank you.
All right,
absolutely. Thanks for having me.
All right, that's Jacob Rayford from We Rising. Some comments about this when we get back here in just a moment. Running a bit late. We'll be back in a moment.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
Hey, thanks for being here. If you've not subscribed to the Mike Broomhead Show podcast yet, I'd love for you to do that. It's very simple to do on any device that you have, and you'll never miss a minute of the show again. It's the Mike Broomhead Show podcast, brought to you this week by Retirement Planners of America. So let's talk we just had a guest on the show. His name is Jacob Rayford. He's the communications director. I shouldn't say that. He is the lead organizer for We Rising, and it's an organization that wants to change policing. I led off with a question about defunding the police, and he said it is a version of defunding the police. So they want to take money away from the police department, which would decrease the officers we have now, and create a new force, if I understand exactly what he's saying, that would be unarmed and that would deal with situations that they believe are nonviolent. Well, nobody, and when you're talking about mental health issues, when you're talking about drug abuse issues, homeless situation, we talked about people that didn't have homes. You don't know when they're going to turn violent, and that's why armed officers are dispatched. He also made the point that they could always call for someone to be there. Well, that takes time, and things turn violent in an instant. So we both agree on the fact that officers don't have enough training at times. I agree with that wholeheartedly. When you have a police department that is policing a city that is bigger in landmass and population than Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and yet your police department is half the size, officers are chasing their tail. We've watched crime increase, violent crimes have gone up, murders have gone up, gun violence has gone up in Phoenix. And the reason why is because the criminals have the upper hand right now. And I didn't get to the story because I wanted Mr. Rayford to be able to make his points. But in all of these cities where they have defunded the police, where there has been a defunding of the police, they have seen a huge increase in crime. And so you're seeing them put funding back. The very neighborhoods that defund the police movement aims to help are the ones most affected by the increases in the crime. So the policy, the premise that they're arguing from doesn't seem to be working. So my argument is we need more officers. We need more men and women that are trained. When you have one officer on a scene, I will give you a real life example with the time I have left. And I've used this example before. 43rd Avenue and Union Hills, about, I don't know, less than a year ago, there was an officer that pulled up, a Phoenix police officer that pulled up to a scene of a man with a knife. She got out of her police cruiser and she confronted the suspect pulling her firearm. He was yelling and screaming obscenities at the top of his lungs. He was definitely out of control. He pursued her as she backed away and kept him at a distance, keeping her eye on the people around, knowing that if she had to shoot her firearm, that there were people around that could be in danger. I mean, I'm guessing that based on what she was doing. She circled her vehicle. This guy kept pursuing her, screaming and screaming and screaming. Finally, he kind of lunged at her and she had to pull the trigger. You could hear backup coming. You could hear sirens in the background, but this went on for over 1 minute. When you watch that video, it was a long 1 minute. Had there been someone else on that scene with her, had there been two people in that vehicle, whatever the case may be, One could have possibly had less than lethal, and she had lethal force, or the other way around. And then when someone is not complying, you could deploy a taser or something else. When a police officer is facing a deadly weapon like a knife, and they have no other choice, they are not going to face off with somebody with a knife that's out of control with less than lethal force. That's no way there's a training in the world that would do that. So I would argue that having more trained officers that have the ability to be trained better, that have the ability to show up in force, when I mean in mass, because there is really strength in numbers, reduces the time of violent crimes because people are less likely to be violent when they're outmanned. That's my argument in this. And we all are talking about a change in what we can do to have a better city. I just think this is a better way of doing it. Coming up after just after 10 o'clock, we're going to talk about the vaccine. Pfizer wants full FDA approval, and more on the vaccine coming up next.